Hey, you're listening to Blindsight. Let's go. Mental health isn't something to take lightly. It's time to fight. It's time to thrive. Let's do this.
Welcome to Blindsight. This is your host, Bill Lundgren, and I'm real excited to be continuing our work in talking about the 12 steps, which is associated with AA and started with AA, but has a lot of ramifications in much of our lives. And our guest today, Darren, I have trouble remembering your last name. I'm sorry, Darren.
Darren Zenger.
Thank you. It is early in the morning. But I welcome you to the program. You're involved with a family program at a program in Utah.
Yeah, I'm a LCSW here at Cirque Lodge, which is a residential treatment center for substance use and addiction. And we do really believe in the family being involved. We have a family week every 3 weeks where we invite the residents, family members to come in, do some work, learn about codependency, family systems, aftercare or family program, and just really get a wraparound support for them.
Great. I'm so glad you're doing that, because that's a part that often gets neglected.
Oh, absolutely.
So could you, for our audience, repeat the second step?
The second step is that we come to believe in a higher, I can't remember word for word, believe in a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity.
There you go. Okay, great. You're in recovery, correct?
Early recovery, yeah. A few years ago, I had a sex addiction, as well as I did some, things with alcohol and things like that, and realized, that wasn't a good combination for myself.
Yes, I can relate to that. And what was it like for you to turn yourself over, to come to that realization, one of unmanageability, which is one, but then to say, look, who's out there that's going to help me?
Well, it wasn't really until someone I came to my grips and realized what it was doing to myself, and not only that, but my relationship with my family and things like that. And so I decided, reach out to my church and figure out, hey, what do I do here, And I went through the 12 steps and I just took a step back and just realized, I've come to believe that, and with the big book, it always talks about the spiritual malady, lack of spiritual connection. And that was really what, turned me around back in 2008, 2009, when I was, dealing with that.
Mm. And what was that like for you to say, have that aha realization? I mean, what, it changed your life immediately? It took a while?
It was a process. I think it was realizing for me is like, I can't, just realizing, the sneakiness around addiction. Trying to hide things, trying to displace things out on other people and not taking accountability. And I realized, that was shame. And so for me, is to acknowledge what shame is and try not to let my shame talk get to the best of me, and started reframing things in a way that say, hey, you know what? I made poor choices. I can take accountability from today and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking this morning how we can really generalize, the steps to not, and you're highlighting this, to not just to alcohol, but to all aspects of our lives. And I know for me, as a blind person, I thought I could manage. Sure, you know, it's absolutely. A gradual blindness I could manage, and it was becoming unmanageable. And the idea of giving up my practice and going for 10 months to my program, I thought was a dumb idea, but I mm-hmm. had to turn it over.
Yeah, I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't just do this for, you know, my family. I had young kids, you know, I had my wife at the time and just realizing what I was really doing to my family. And these are the values that I had as being a family man and all this other stuff. And realize I just threw all that away and not really have that spiritual connection. And then once I realized that was missing, then things started shifting for me.
Exactly. Exactly. So what happened next?
I did the 12 steps, and I even did it with my wife at that time. We did it together. We worked through it together, and things have actually gotten better and keep moving forward. A little bit about me is at that time I was, you know, I am not only blind, but I'm also deaf. So I have Usher syndrome. And so as I move forward, I got cochlear implants, and then I decided, you know, to go back and get my master's in social work, and one thing led to another, and so here I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just by, you know, as I say, get a grip, get the spiritual life to bring it forward.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, what's kind of funny is, you know, my son, you know, last summer, you know, was kind of in this, and, you know, he says, you know, Dad has changed, you know, and then even for me, having, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, my son come to me and said, Dad, I got busted. You guys always told me to write, but, you know, here I am using, you know, illegal drugs. And, you know, for me as a therapist, had to separate my therapy hat from my dad hat and support that space for him as he went through the legal system. Because, you know, as any parent, you want to, you know, help your kids and not have to go through this, you know. And I know this court systems, and I know the power that the therapist can have in the court systems. And so I had to separate that and go through that with him.
And that's tough.
It was tough. It was, I broke down after he told me, and I reached out to my supervisor, my own clinical director, and I told her everything. I just broke down, and that just kind of brought up some shame for my own addiction, thinking, you know, I was my own, you know, that I was created this and things like that. So it was like, you know, just that shame talk kind of cycles in. I wasn't triggered or anything of that nature, but it just really, really hit me.
Mm-hmm.
So again, reaching out when I'm struggling like this and before it gets to a problem, you know, just recognizing, okay, if I'm going to get through this with a clear head, I need to reach out and get to my supports.
Mm-hmm. So who were the supports there for you?
A lot of it was my roommate at the time. He doesn't have an addiction. A lot of the other piece was my, you know, my clinical team, my clinical director at that time was my support. I had some other supports with my family and, you know, a few close friends that were helping me get through this, you know.
And the sense of shame that you have to give up in order to reach out, because shame tends to internalize everything.
And I had to reach out to my higher power as well. I mean, that's that piece there, right?
You know,
that ties into step three is, you know, align our will to God as we understand him. And I had to really dig in and do step three to help me get through this.
Yeah, and we'll be talking about step three next week, which is I'm glad that you'll be on to continue what you're talking about here, because so many of us don't realize where we are, that, you know, that we're caught. We don't realize the things are unmanageable, and that there are some steps that we have to take in order to make changes.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like
I think most people in recovery, especially when it comes to step two, ties into step 10 when you do your daily inventory, right? You know, you got to review every day of what's going on. You have to be so aware of this and be aware that, you know, if we go back to this space of unmanageability, step one, then we're going insane. And so for us to have that clear head, we have to have that faith that something greater than ourselves are going to help us get going. It might not be on our own time frame, you know?
Right.
But, you know, that's the hard piece that I think many people struggle with is, oh, I've done the steps, but no, your work does not end there. It just began.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, our ego keeps getting in the way.
Oh, absolutely. And the pride. And I always tell people, you know, humility is a huge piece to this whole process as well. So you can have that insight and that awareness and understand why you're triggered, why things are happening. So you take a step back and look at, okay, this is what's happening. Because, you know, I talk to people all the time, you know, I can't identify all the triggers. You know, it's impossible. And so we can be aware of, you know, people, places, and things,
mm-hmm.
that we can draw generalized ideas, but still apply the same skills and tools to help us navigate those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what you're talking about in part of getting ready to turn it over is just to look at those things that are going to trigger us.
Absolutely.
It's going to continue to reinforce that path part of us, and that we have to pay attention to it, and that we aren't necessarily the one to manage it. We have to get some help.
Absolutely. And that ties back into, like you said, that ego piece. That ego likes to take over. The addictive brain, you know, it can be really loud.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to learn how to calm that down and invite something higher than ourselves. And, you know, I was recently, a couple of years ago, I went to it was like a workshop presentation by a psychologist. His name is Matt Townsend. And something stood out to me, the way he put things into perspective, especially with a higher power, is that, you know, we are part of this universe. I mean, there's things greater than ourselves. I mean, solar system, for example. And he came from a scientific standpoint.
Right.
And he says, you as an individual are one in 419th trillionth of part of this universe, and you're trying to control what? Stop and think. It says, what are we trying to control when we're all interconnected some way?
Can you carry that a little bit further? Because I think you were saying something very, very important, how that applies to you, how you took that in.
Yeah, because for me, you know I can't do this. I'm just one person out of, what, 7 billion, 9 billion people? And I'm trying to control what? And there's so many other systems and factors going through, and nature, forces of nature. I can go to, you know, something higher than myself. And I always have people look at, if you put something good in the universe, it's going to come out, and it's going to come well. You know, I have people look at good karma. You know, if you put something out, something good's going to come back in. And so I start with them with that type of analogy to help them understand how they can move forward to have a belief in something greater than themselves. You know, I sit here in the process group and tell people, you know, this group right here is a power greater than yourself, because you can't just do it by yourself.
And you can embrace that and allow all those things around you to help you gain the strength you need to do what you're, can I say, guided to do. Because you as a counselor were guided to do what you're doing, whether we, any of us, admit it, you know, there was something that made that work for us to become the professionals we are, the kind of people that we are, but we have to let it happen.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got to trust the process, right? You know, in my addiction, we're very impulsive. I'm very impulsive. And so we expect that we're going to get results right away. And so
it's
hard to rethink things and trust the process, and things will happen as they're supposed to, you know.
Right, not on our time necessarily.
And so because of that impulsivity, that's a very hard concept for people in recovery, in early recovery, trying to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we want results immediately.
Exactly. And that's just human nature, too. So, yeah. So you know, I can't just blame people who are addictive, but it's just human nature to want instant gratification or instant results.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like it's 10 times or 100 times more powerful when in addiction, because it kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, kind of makes it feel bigger than it really is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so it feels daunting. It feels overwhelming. And so then you get the case of the efforts and just go back and use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing is to, you know, the patience to, and particularly when you know it's not my time, it's that higher power's time.
Exactly.
That is going to make it happen, and that we have to be okay to turn it over and say, okay, I'm part of the game, but you're calling the plays.
Exactly. And I'll bring this concept up in was step three, but I always tell people, you know, they think, you know, when they think about a higher power, says, well, where's my self-will come into play? It says, well, you can do self-will, but you just kind of go out of the bounds of that relationship. And I use a platoon for an example. You know, you get all the people in a platoon and brigade or whatever, and they all have a common goal. But if you operate within that, you still have freedom within that boundary of, you know, what you need to achieve. But when you start operating outside of that boundary, then you're just self-sabotaging.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when you think about coming to understand God as we understand Him, thinking people erroneously think that, you know, you're giving up your own will and you know, just doing whatever God tells you to do. And so trying to separate those distinctions is
right. In other words, turn it over means I don't have to do anything. It's all up to God to take care of it, and I just go along with the flow, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, you turn it over, but also be willing to recognize you don't have to go through this by yourself. There's somebody or something that can help you navigate this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's that piece is you're being this teamwork, you know. Another example that I use is, okay, I got my hand, I got, you know, four fingers and a thumb, and they all have a piece of part of me. But if I start losing my thumb or my fingers, then my hand can't be as effective. You know, so I look at how can we use this as a tool to make our lives better.
And you feel like your life is getting better and better.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I just, you know, for me, do I make mistakes? Do I still have thoughts? Do I still have cravings? Absolutely. But it's not, you know, unmanageable right now, because I have the resources, the skills. You know, I got a beautiful wife who is side by side with me every step of the way, and I can talk to her. I got relationships with my siblings, my kids, you know, and so talking about things has been huge for me to know that I can, you know, something greater than myself, mm-hmm. power that I don't have to take steps backwards. I have to be mindful of that every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you think having Usher syndrome had anything to do with the unmanageability and the things that happened to you?
I think it did, because, you know, for me, from early on in my life, where I came to a point where, you know, I couldn't benefit from a hearing aid for a couple of years. Mm. And my vision was getting worse, and, you know, this wasn't the life I thought it was, and all the anxiety, the depression, and all that came with it. I was like, screw this, you know. But I had to realize, you know, as I got through this, you know, I couldn't get what I wanted. You know, I had to come to realize I do have limitations, absolutely. But I had to be patient as the process, when the time was right, you know, to get a cochlear implant. So I got that, you know, in 2011. Then I got my other ear done in 2012. And then in 2013, I was accepted and started my master's program. And so being able to hear has enabled me to go back to school. And during that process, I got myself a guide dog. And I've been a guide dog handler ever since as well. And he comes to work with me. I tell people all the time, he's the one that got me hired. You know, I just come to work because he's here. He's the one that got me hired.
We know where we stand in relation to our dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's a integral part here, because, you know, I don't have him on harness all the time. You know, he's got his own bed on the side of the bed here, you know, and he's free to roam. And I know with a lot of clients, you know, having a dog can be therapeutic with them in this process.
Well, it's kind of like we're known as our dog dad. They forget our name, but they'll always remember the dog's name. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that keeps us, I don't know about you, but it keeps me humble.
Oh, they do. It is. And, you know, it was my first guide dog that got me through my divorce. And you know, there was that piece of, okay, we can do this together. He became my sidekick and my best friend. At that point, that also was part of my higher power, because we got this. We went to graduate school together, and, you know, I got, you know, He got an honorary master's degree from, you know, a lot of my peers and stuff. And a lot of people like to sit next to us in our classes, because if some of their treats fell on the floor, my dog would start crawling over and grabbing it.
Right.
So it was just kind of fun around that. And we had a lot of fun, you know.
And that's really crucial.
I can be sorry for ourselves.
Yes, exactly.
You can look at it and say, you know what? That's an accountability piece. You know what? This sucks. But you know what? I'm taking charge. I'm going to be accountable to myself so that I can have a better life.
Mm-hmm. And in a way, sometimes when we turn it over to our dog, you know, we're doing the same thing, turning it over and letting him do some work for us, just as we turn it over to higher power to.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To anything outside of ourselves, because if it's just ourselves, we're in trouble.
Yeah, that's very true. And I agree with that. And like I say, you know, I think about Brené Brown, you know, with some of her work, we're wired to be connected to people.
Yeah.
You know, the opposite of addiction is connection.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And addiction is isolation. And we're not, And so people misunderstand that concept, that even just connecting, whether it's an animal or your best friend or whatever, that is huge in the process of, you know, starting to believe in something higher than yourself to get you back on the track that you need to be.
Well, you're making a good point for those who are blind, who isolate because of their blindness. A lot of older people do that, but some of the rest of us do. We just shame, if you will, of our blindness or our hearing deficit, or it's just too much work, and we hide out, and then we're in trouble because we're isolating when we're really connected, should be and can be connected to other people to help us.
Absolutely. And it's kind of like, you know, there could be some underlying mental health condition that's going on, the anxiety, the depression, the inability to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
This is huge. I mean, I had to learn to adapt. It was very frustrating in that time being deaf and blind, where, you know, trying to get some training and stuff like for JAWS or any other type of screen reader and not knowing Braille and trying to find a job back in that, it was tough.
But yep.
Mm-hmm. For me, I wasn't willing to just sit around and do nothing. Once I was able to hear, and I went back into training, and that changed my world around. Mm-hmm. And my vocational rehab counselor was willing to support me. She's like, holy cow, this is changing everything for you. And she was willing to support me to go get my master's. And here I am.
Yep.
Like I said, it goes back to the timing of everything. So, you know, we want things now. And I see that behavior, you know, back in the day when I was struggling, trying to find out who I am. You know, I was a stay-at-home dad. Great. I love that job. I love staying home with my kids. But, you know, I was so indoctrinated and ingrained in my head that, you know, the man's supposed to be the one to bring them, you know, work hard and bring that kind of thing. And so I had a hard time adapting to my own circumstances. And once I was able to switch and accept that, that's that other piece, is to accept the unmanageability of it, then I can be humble enough to, okay, what do I need to do to go from point A to point B, and willingness to learn new skills. And so I'm not just sitting home and isolating, because that's all mm-hmm. I did. That's what got me into trouble.
Yep.
Is I isolated. I isolated from my family. I isolated from everything else, because I always had this idea of thinking that nobody understood what it was like to be deaf and blind.
Exactly. And, you know, nobody will, and you sort of give up and say, well, I have to live with this and whatever, and we can't. We want to be out there.
Yeah, we do.
And so, but if we don't have anything else to do, then we get into trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And then, this feels good. So
right, temporarily.
The uncomfortability of depression. So I keep drinking, or I keep using, I keep doing whatever I'm doing to numb all that out, because, you know, you get to a point where, you know, it's like, this feels better. And then all of a sudden, the neurochemistry in our brains with addiction just takes over. And so we have to keep using, because, you know, it kind of, you know, our addictive brain takes over and saying, hey, this is a necessity to live.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fall into that trap of, you know, I can't do this, because, you know, there is that chemical change in our brains. And that's why addiction is very addictive. It's so hard to work through. And that's, you know, part of why we can't do it alone, because there's no pill that's, you can take, like, you know, diabetes or heart, you know, blood pressure issues or heart problems. We can take a pill and do stuff like this, but with addiction, we can't treat it with a pill. We have to treat it in a different way. And according to Bill W., in the big book, it comes across as a spiritual melody.
Mm-hmm.
And creating that connection. And it's a program that's been around for almost 100 years, and it's worked for thousands and thousands and thousands of people in recovery.
And the thing is that with the 12 steps, with deciding, oh, I'm not trapped. Because really what you were talking about before we make a decision to turn it over is the belief that we're trapped in our situation. We can't do anything about it, and we just have to anesthetize ourselves periodically. But once we realize, oh, I'm not in it alone, I'm not trapped, but I also have to give up some of that ego and say, okay, higher power, help me with this. And then when we trust that, then we start to move forward and they say, oh, I am not trapped. And then that's when everything changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings in why we have family work. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times from a family systems perspective, we don't know, you know, I get frustrated when I hear family members tell my clients, well, if you would just go to church, well, I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, intentions are well, but there's that codependency nature of things.
Right.
And then we look at the family system, especially when we talk about ACEs, which is what stands for adverse childhood experiences, to realize all these things that we've experienced in our life has a huge part in this. And so we look at a family system, recognize every family member has a role in addiction. That's why we don't think it's just a problem with me. It's
right.
A problem with the whole family because they're so disconnected.
Yeah, exactly. And that's part of what Lois W. realized when she threw her slippers at Bill W. She had to work on herself.
Mm-hmm. Everybody
in order to help the relationship and to help herself and to get out of that enabling role that she may have been in.
Absolutely. And, you know, codependency is a big portion of this. People don't always understand what codependency is. And once
right.
they start to understand, it's like, oh, crap, I've enabled this person, you know, my loved one for so long, but I need to learn how to implement healthy boundaries. I don't want to do this because, you know, I don't want them to walk on eggshells.
Right.
We can't own somebody else's emotion. I mean, we all have our own individual work. That's why we have Alan on for the family members that are not in addiction. So they can do their own work, their own 12-step program, work with their own sponsor, similar to the person in addiction who goes through the steps and works with their own sponsor.
But it's so attractive to be in charge of somebody and helping and caretaking and, you know, and being the one that's saving that family member when actually they're doing the opposite. And that's the mm-hmm. realization that you're trying to teach.
Yeah, and that was my big aha moment when my son came to me. I had to take a step back because I knew,
right.
you know, my codependency. I didn't want him to suffer.
Right, absolutely.
And so when I took a step back and started looking at that, it's like, he's got to do this. I got to hold boundaries. I can hold space for him, maintain healthy boundaries, and let him do what he needs to do. And then I can be on the side to support him, and he will reach out to me, and he did. And as a result of that, you know, our relationship got stronger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's great to this, you know, to this day, we have a really solid relationship, and I'm grateful for that.
That's super. A lot of good work that you've been able to accomplish, and I hope you take pride in that.
It's
okay to say, hey, you know, with help, I've been able to do a lot of things, and that's important to reinforce.
For sure.
We've come to the end of our time for now. I'm looking forward to our doing the third step, and I appreciate, but all that you've said and shared. Is there any last comment or thought that you want to leave our listeners about what you've said, what you've been thinking, or even to think about for our next session?
Well, I would think that, you know, go get the big book. Just hear the stories in the big book, and mm-hmm. you know, it, there's a lot of insightful stuff in there, and that's really helpful. And especially with, you know, especially with people who, well, I think people confuse higher power with God or God with higher power. Right. Those terms are interchangeable, and then that's okay. Don't get hung up on spirituality versus religiosity, because they're two separate concepts.
Good.
And so people get hung up with this, and a higher power, it's just a higher power. Some people call it God, great. That's fine. Some people call it nature, great. That's fine. You know, just don't you know, get stuck on the semantics of word and figure out what your own higher power is and
right.
how that's going to help you. That's the important key. And that's what really spirituality is, because it's true to you. Because my higher power and my spirituality is going to be different from yours, Bill, and that's okay.
Right, right. I had a counselor friend of mine say to a client, I don't care if your higher power is your refrigerator. You need something outside of yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This has been great. I want to remind people that they can get a copy of the big book through the Talking Book Library. It's on audio, and a number of literature from AA is available on the Talking Book if reading is a problem. It's easy to get.
And if I could throw out, there's an app out there called Everything AA, and the big book is in there, including...
Oh, is it? Okay, good. That's good information.
That with Everything AA, it has everything in there. It's great.
Super. So it's no excuse not to look into it. It's also no excuse for you not to give us some feedback on this and other programs, ideas. We have a feedback hotline, which is the... I always... forget that, 720-712-8856, or send us an email. That's feedback@aftersight.org. And we appreciate your feedback, and we keep it in mind as we plan our program. And Darren, I look forward to our talking again, and thank you for being here at this program.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Okay, great.